This poor fish should never have left home. He's about to be scraped, scaled, scissored, eviscerated, salted, seasoned, and seared. See his ordeal by fire when we do flaming fish today on the French Chef.
If you want to make more home-cooked meals this year and make cooking more fun at the same time, maybe take a page from Julia Child's book. The beloved chef hosted her own TV show and wrote best-selling cookbooks. Now a new exhibit called Julia Child, A Recipe for Life, explores her love for food and her spirit in the kitchen. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss Julia Child's recipe for success and how she influenced local chefs are Cincinnati Museum Center President and CEO Elizabeth Pierce. Thanks for being here, Elizabeth.
Thanks for having me.
And La Soupe founder, Susie DeYoung. Welcome back, Susie.
Hi, Lucy. Thank you for having me.
Julia Child is this larger-than-life personality. Whether you watched her legendary show or watched Dan Aykroyd's legendary parody of her in the early years of Saturday Night Live.
I'm Julia Child. Today, we're going to make a holiday feast, or Les Fêtes d'Holiday. And we're going to start with half-bone chicken or poulard. Demi de saucisse. Now you need a fine, fat, roasting chicken like this one. And first, remove the giblets, and you really should...
That audio, of course, is courtesy of Saturday Night Live. Elizabeth, what made Julia Child so special?
Oh, Lucy, I mean, just so much fun and joy that she brings to life and to cooking. And, you know, I think it was driven by her insatiable curiosity. She was just always, I've been doing the deep dive into biographies and memoirs about her, and just always through it, it was a quest for learning, for enjoyment, and this tenacious spirit that really drove her. So I never met her, though Susie met her. And so, you know, that's one of the fun things about the connection of bringing the exhibition to town is pulling out those stories of people who had a chance to interact with her and see that up close and personal.
Susie, you met her. I didn't realize that. Tell me about that. What was that? More than once? Or
no. God bless the Mercantile Library, brought Julia in. And I believe, I may be wrong, but I think it was for the Niehoff before they moved the Niehoff over to a larger venue. And we were asked to cook. It was, I believe it was her last book. And she was the lecturer. And
wow.
So it was dinner, and then she gave a talk.
So you cooked for Julia Child.
And 150 of my closest friends.
What kind of pressure was that like?
And crazy. And I was actually just telling Selena, I don't know. I had nerves of steel back then.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did it. I think about it now when I start hyperventilating, but she was beyond lovely, so it made it really memorable. And honestly, you're in a library. There's no kitchen. There's hot boxes that we brought in, and that was it. And I, you know, looked up, and she was standing at the elevators at the Merkin. You know, you're up on the 11th floor. The door's open. She's standing there by herself. And I thought, that's our time. So I ran over with my sister, Michelle, and we got our book signed. And then I said, would you want to see the kitchen? Like, and she goes, in a library, of course, you know. So she toddled over, and we showed her what we were serving. She opened up one of the hot boxes, and this is my most favorite memory. I have a cold, so it's not going to be as good, but I smell butter. And it's just like, in my mind, it'll never go away. And then when she asked what the soup was, and I said, well, I read that your butternut squash was your favorite soup, so I hope you enjoy. Oh, I'd like to try that. And so she, not me, opened the igloo. We had it all heated in an igloo and stuck her finger in. Licked her finger. And Elizabeth, did you see the text I sent you last night?
I did.
Is that too funny? So I've been researching a lot, and I was reading I'm reading the autobiography of Pierre Frani, and he was a critic for the New York Times. He talks a lot about Julia, and he talks about the finger you always use your finger. You never use a spoon when you're tasting. And I thought, okay, it was a thing back then.
Wow, go
figure. Well, there's some science behind that, right? The metal is going to react with the food in a different way than your finger is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and let's all just trust that Julia Child always had clean hands.
Yeah. Plenty of people lived after eating her
there
food.
There you go.
So, yeah, you got that.
That's right. Well, a lot of people, you mentioned butter, a lot of people have dietary restrictions or are looking to cut calories in their cooking. Julia Child seemed completely to contradict that.
Of course, the nice thing with mashed potatoes, you can add as much butter or as little as you want. And if you're afraid of butter, which many people are nowadays, you just put in cream.
It's my favorite. I love that. I love that.
What do you think of that approach, Susie? Do people worry too much about the butter, the cream, all those things?
I believe that. The older I get, the fancier stuffy food or fancy food, whatever, it's losing its appeal literally weekly for me. It is now, if you can take a really good piece of chicken and just broil it, roast it, saute it in not all that fancy. And that's why I think her food, people could see that and feel that.
Yeah.
You know?
Elizabeth, what do you think set her cooking show apart? I heard her say in an interview that she thought it was important to show the mistakes so everyday cooks would know how to handle them. Was that a novel approach? What really made that special?
Well, I think that it revolutionized, this entire industry that we enjoy today. So part of what I understand about her history and her process was she fluked into the television because she was trying to promote the book, The Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And so she went on the WGBH's book talk show and essentially made an omelet in her lap on that television show, and then really had the tenacious notion to go and advocate to continue to do that. And the show really took off. And I think people responded because it was made for the home cook, encouraging of the home cook, and really encouraged. It gave people a sense of creativity and an outlet, and encouraged them to try some things. And, my father became a huge, he loved cooking so much. And it was really, I think, driven in part because he loved watching her television show on PBS, and that led him to experiment in other ways in the kitchen, much to my mother's chagrin, she was getting in her way. But, I think it just, she was encouraging of people wanting to try things, and that it didn't have to be perfect, and it could be simple and straightforward. I mean, that omelet recipe, and I went back and rewatched that PBS episode. I mean, that omelet is over and done in 2.5 minutes, right? It's not complicated. It's a little bit of technique, and then you've got a delicious meal.
Elizabeth, you just mentioned her cookbook and how she went on TV to kind of try to promote the cookbook. Did she revolutionize the cookbook too? I mean, what kind of impact did she have on that?
Oh, I don't know that I'm an expert to speak on that, but I think that what's fascinating to me about Mastering the Art of French Cooking is that, she and Simca and Louisette created the book. She and Simca really carried it across the finish line. Over the course of 10 years, they worked on that book, and they worked on it sending letters back and forth that they had typed on mimeograph sheets together. So just think about that relative to the speed of communication that we have today and the way the process would work. But the fundamental dynamic is that they were trying to present these French recipes that could be made at home without a lot of extraneous nature. Now, you say that, and there's still an entire chapter about aspic in the book. So I'm trying to
Elizabeth, the first time I ever cooked a Julia recipe was the French bread from that book. Do you know how many pages that is? It's 15.
Oh, my goodness.
15 pages to make a loaf of bread.
I bet it was good, though.
I was I'm going to say probably 10 to 12 years old, and my dad was sick. And I know that Lippert's Bakery on Hyde Park Square was making the French bread for the Maisonette. And I thought, well, maybe I could do it. And this is the book that I used. And that poor man was so sick and he had to sit there and look at me making pencils because he never rose. I didn't know what I was doing, you know, but I tried to follow it to the thing. It was like a 5-day loaf of bread, as I recall.
Oh, my goodness.
It did not work.
And for folks who don't know, your dad, of course, was the chef at the Maisonette.
Right.
So he knew a thing or two about...
about French batards. Yeah.
Susie, is Julia Child the queen of the poached egg? What was her secret there?
I think she normalized food that we all wanted to make and made it look so easy. It's not, you know, it's all technique. When you just said that about the omelet, I'm laughing, Elizabeth, because 99% of the chefs out there could not make that omelet the same.
Oh.
You know, I mean, there's 1,000 ways to make an omelet, but she makes it the French way. And that is all, as Jacques would say, it's a technique. Mm. So...
we're talking about Julia Child and a new exhibit that celebrates her cooking and her life. Did she influence you or your approach to cooking? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. It seems like she didn't take herself too seriously and she was all about having fun in the kitchen.
You know, the other day when I was mucking about in the supermarket looking for something to eat, I was sort of in a bad mood, and nothing I looked at appealed to me at all. I looked at all the chickens and the ducks and the fish and the steaks and the lamb, and I just didn't want to cook any bit of it. I found myself staring at a fresh beef tongue, and I said to it, "You ugly old thing, I'd like to fix you up." Then I thought to myself, well, why not? It'll be a change anyway. So I trotted home with my tongue under my arm, and I braised it.
I can remember my grandma making beef tongue, and it never looked delightful to me. Susie, was that part of the joy that she made? Did she make cooking less intimidating with her humor?
I think it was that. It was, yes. She was very, and she kind of made it sound like, hey, we're winging it together. Like, it never seemed forced. You know, like, we got to get this going because this has got to cook at the same. It just seems so natural, yeah. I think, is.
Elizabeth, one of the things I find so interesting about Julia Child is that cooking was kind of her second act. She worked for the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, during World War II. Is some of that history part of the exhibit at the Museum Center?
I think you're going to be blown away by the depth of her personal history that's in this exhibition. And it is so beautifully done with incredible photographs and maps and images. And it's really going to take you a bit to digest it all because it does go through her entire life. I mean, we know from these different movies and shows, we know snippets of her life, but this exhibition that's been so beautifully put together by the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts and the Schlesinger Library and Harvard Radcliffe Institute have all really, like, they've taken all those papers and all those details about her entire life and put it here on display. So you do get a sense of her entire approach and how she really, you know, used that sense of creativity to channel her purpose into cooking and teaching and the joy that brought to people. So it's a beautiful exhibition and it really covers a lot of ground.
And Elizabeth, I understand the Museum Center also has an area devoted to Cincinnati chefs and their culinary contributions. Who's highlighted there and why was that important to you to have that kind of accompany this exhibition?
Well, you know, every time we bring one of these traveling exhibitions from somewhere else, there's always a Cincinnati thread to it that can be illuminated and no doubt here. So we wanted to showcase a little bit of how Cincinnati had been influenced by the French chefs that had come through. And even going back as early to the 1840s, there was a woman named Edith Hearne Fawcett, and she and her sons, Peter and William, ran a catering business. And they had learned culinary techniques because Edith had been enslaved at Thomas Jefferson's kitchens at Monticello. And ultimately, as westward expansion brought people further into the area, she and her family wound up in Cincinnati. So we've had this legacy of French cooking in Cincinnati for a very long time. Obviously, we wanted to make the connection with Pierre Adrien and the Maisonette and his legacy there. And then, you know, that leads to Jean Robert coming to town and then the ways in which Jean Robert de Caval influenced a whole generation or two of chefs that are running amok in Cincinnati now. So it's this very interesting legacy of French cooking that Cincinnati has that we were able to highlight and pull forward. And then, you know, that goes off in a thousand different directions, that Cincinnati has this vibrant culinary scene that we're all participating in. So it's been a really important part of the conversation.
Susie, what does that mean to you to have these local chefs recognized alongside Julia Child?
That's a part, and I haven't gotten to see Elizabeth since the show because I definitely want to go back, as I said to Selena. There were too many people there. I was talking too much. I didn't get a chance to really absorb it, but it did blow me away. Like, you go into the Cincinnati edition part, and it was goosebumps. And I would encourage anybody that cooks, definitely every professional. I don't care if you're the professional dishwasher. It is just a beautiful exhibit, and it puts a smile on your face. Like, you're just smiling the whole time. So I would encourage everybody to go. And yeah, it did mean a lot to me to turn and see my dad's face there. It was very cool.
Yeah, I bet. I mentioned that Dan Aykroyd parody of Julia Child at the top of our conversation. And, you know, there are probably people out there who know that version of Julia Child better than they know the real Julia Child. Elizabeth, why do you think now's a good time to learn more about Julia Child? How can her approach to cooking and to life resonate with us in 2025?
I hope people take away that sense of joy that she had and that sense of creativity and curiosity, right? That's fundamentally what I want people to walk out of Cincinnati Museum Center with, is like being curious about the next thing that they're going to learn about, that they're going to pick up additional information, and that's going to help guide them to a career or guide them to a bigger understanding of the world in some way. And so that's why we bring this exhibition to town. And there's so much fun and joy that can come out of it. And hopefully it will create conversations and great dinner table experiences and people cooking together, right? And that's kind of core to the humanity that we all share, is sitting down together around a meal. So it's a lot of fun, and it's free with your membership and free as general part of your general admission. So please come visit us at Cincinnati Museum Center.
What do you think, Susie? Why is now in 2025, why is now a good time to kind of really get a better understanding of Julia Child, her approach to cooking, her approach to life, who she was? Why now?
She was a frugal lady. And with the cost of food, you know, nothing went to waste. Like any good chef, you do not waste. But now more than ever, when everything seems to be so expensive, just learning how to use what you have and, you know, create without feeling so boxed in by something. She just kind of went with the flow. And I think she gave everybody that watches the show the permission, just try it. You know, what's the worst that could happen, you know? So.
Well, you do a lot of that with La Soupe. I mean, that's the whole foundation of this organization you founded, to let nothing go to waste and make something creative. Did that come from Julia Child's influence?
I couldn't say directly to that. I just think that as a person, as a public figure, and so much footage of her, it drives home that every single piece of every single vegetable, of every cut of meat, there is a purpose. You just have to be open to do it. And so I think in the big picture, no, but...
Yeah. Well, and Elizabeth, in just the minute we have left, why was it important to bring this to Cincinnati? Why did you feel like Cincinnati needed to see this Julia Child exhibition?
I thought Cincinnati would just enjoy it as a town that has such a legacy of food and cooking and agricultural connections, like, and this incredible legacy of these three restaurants, the Gourmet Room, the Galls, and the Maisonette, that people would resonate with it and they'd really come out and enjoy it. So I hope that's the case.
You gave yourself a whole new title too, didn't you?
Yes. As I said to Lucy earlier, I am the self-appointed food curator at the museum because I think it's the perfect pathway into science and to history. And we've been driving our Create Culinary Studio with really fun experiences as well. So I think food and cooking is just central to so many things that create joy and learning.
Yeah, it sounds like I see you nodding very vigorously to that, Susie.
I love you, Elizabeth. I mean, you bring so much to our city. It just, you get it. I guess that's, I don't know. She's not sitting with me, so I can say that. I don't know where you are, Elizabeth. But.
Well, I've been talking Running with... Up. There you go. I've been talking with Cincinnati Museum Center President and CEO Elizabeth Pierce and La Soupe founder Susie DeYoung. Thank you both so much for your time today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy.
The exhibit Julia Child, A Recipe for Life, runs through May 18th at the Cincinnati Museum Center. You can find a link with more information on our website, wbxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director is Marshall Burbsky. Rob Betters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.